Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
What's up, guys? It's your boy Dylan at Thunderjazz, and I'm here with a word from our sponsors, BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports contests and events with first-to-market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. BetOnline continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Just head to BetOnline today or use your mobile device to join today and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BLEAV50, that is BLEAV50 in all capital letters, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. And welcome back, everybody, to another edition of the Topic Thunder podcast. I'm your host, Dylan Hunzinger at Thunder Chats. We are part of the Believe Network, and I'm joined by a couple of lovely gentlemen. First, I got my co-hosts here. We've got the one, the only, the underscore, Connor 3 Cone. What up, Cone?
Not much. Excited to talk about the Thunder. Feeling pretty good about our finals chances right now. Rest of the league should be on a bit of a watch. Things are going good. You know, it's a shame we won't get Victor Wembanyama, but I guess I'll settle for a title.
There you go. Hey, and that's perfect lead-in. But first, before we get to that lead-in, before we get to our guests, we've got one more. We've got my ride or die, my compadre, Alejandro, Alex Roy. What's up, Alex?
I'm good, man. Reporting live from the cave. You know, finally get to see the cave on YouTube. So here we go.
Yes, we love it. We love it. Well, hey, let's get to our guests. So joining us today, we've got the co-host of the No Ceilings podcast. If one is the conductor of chaos of the No Ceilings Collective, the other would be the engineer. One is newly married. One is newly engaged. One referred to Jalen Williams in a podcast as, well, we're not going to go there. And one guy mistake PJ Tucker for, or Jameer Nelson for PJ Tucker. returning to the Topic Thunder podcast, once again, representing No Ceilings, we got Tyler Rucker and Tyler Metcalf.
Oh, gosh, that was great. Metcalf, we really have some competition for those intros. I cannot believe I woke up this morning remembering the PJ Tucker thing was going to come back to haunt me. And I was like, oh no, it's coming. I can't avoid it. But thank you guys for having me back on. I didn't get the chance to do this with Metcalf, so we should have a really fun time tonight.
Yeah, I'm pumped to be back on with you guys. And I will save my vulgar language for our own podcast. And I'll try to clean it up over here.
Hey, you feel free to let it fry. Whatever makes you comfortable. We got the explicit tag for a reason. But hey, let's get into it, guys. So before, you know, obviously you guys are draft guys, and there's a big elephant in the room. Like, we'll definitely address that. But this is a Thunder podcast, and we played a game today. A lot of the guys that you guys covered in this past draft, and so before we get to those guys, sorry, I need to look at the doc before I just, like, you know, get into the topics. I know you guys were both very high on a certain Chet Holmgren, so. Let me go ahead and start by asking you, what was your first read on the whole Chet injury saga? Like, how it happened, him playing in the Pro-Am game, them shutting him down for the season, and, you know, how do you think that it's going to impact him, good or bad, in the future? And we'll start with Metcalf, because Rucker's taking a drink.
Okay, I was so trying to let Metcalf have the obvious sign of, like, he should go first, so there you go.
I felt like it was just a fluke thing. It sucked. You know, obviously it gets played up because of how, you know, skinny and fragile Chet is, you know, if you believe everything you read out there, but it felt like something that was a complete fluke. He stepped weird and it happened. If he was like 300 pounds and 7 feet tall, then I'd be a lot more concerned about a foot injury, because that's where the weight and body issues start to come into play. But you know, everyone has an issue with how skinny he is, then they shouldn't have any issue with him recovering from a foot injury. So you obviously never want, you know, your one of your franchise cornerstones to have a foot injury, especially when they're 7 feet tall. But it felt like a fluke incident to me. And I don't really have any like major causes for concern with it. I obviously think shutting him down for the season and just letting him focus on rehabbing and not rushing back, because they're not, you know, unfortunately in a space to rush him back at this point, and just let him get healthy and build up his body and rehab and do all those things. And I just think that'll be the best long-term outlook for him. And I think that's kind of the outlook that they have to have with all their guys right now.
Yeah, just to go off what Metcalf said, I completely agree. You know, obviously it's a little annoying, especially for Thunder fans now, but especially for draft evaluators, you know, we were tired of hearing about how skinny Chet was all year because he's a damn good basketball player. And it didn't take long to see that in summer league. Like, we realized how special he was in Salt Lake City with that first game. And if anything, I thought it was a fluke accident. It's not like he had a reoccurring history with injuries. I know a lot of people out there wanted to point out like lower body injuries with the skin frame or the thin frame. And it's like, okay, let's calm down. Let's give him a full off season or a full season to recover. But he's going to be a damn good basketball player. He's going to be a very big piece for this Thunder organization. I think Presti's being smart. Why are you going to try to rush a guy back his first year in the league? We've seen Ben Simmons, Embiid, Blake Griffin. Those guys have all turned out to be pretty good, not playing their first year. So Chet's going to be fine. He's a workhorse. He's a warrior. He's going to be determined to, you know, he's going to feel like he's cheated. Like, he's like, oh, come on. I wanted to show the world what I can do. And he's going to be determined and remembering that the whole year. So I would not be worried if I was a Thunder fan. I think it's just a tease. You know, you guys obviously saw him in summer league, like I said, and he looks so special, and OKC is going to be fine. If anything, this weirdly might be part of a beautiful plan for Presti and OKC fans moving forward.
That's the narrative the media would have you believe anyway.
Exactly, right?
Presti was literally beneath Chet Holmgren whenever he fell in that pro-am. Like, he was doing that on purpose.
He poured it'll be water interesting under the basket.
Exactly. It'll be interesting when the next CBA comes out, because I have a feeling that'll be a big part of the discussions, because it's obviously awesome to see those guys in pro-ams for the community, but teams don't want to be staying up late at night hoping their guys don't get hurt. So, and the moment it happened to Chet, I was like, thanks a lot, LeBron. This is all your fault. No, I'm kidding. But I really do feel like Chet's going to be fine. He's just too good of a player and too determined, and he's going to work his butt off.
I mean, the moment it happened, I was like, damn, Seattle really hates Oklahoma City.
Especially to happen in Seattle, I was like, oh boy, there's some basketball god stuff going on right now. Yeah. But,
bad juju going on.
Yeah, just unfortunate.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you guys know, like, you know, Chet's work ethic and, like, you know, how much he is driven to be the best. Like, you know, he said in an interview, like, who you think the best player in the league? He's like, me in a few months. So obviously it's a little bit of a derailment, but he's getting shots up even on a scooter, and he's draining shots on his scooter. So yeah, we're very excited for Chet. So kind of moving on.
He's going to be the greatest one-legged jumper, mid-range jumper ever.
Hey, that Dirk move just got a lot stronger this whole year. That's all he's going to be working on for a while. So I hear you.
But yeah, so I mean, you know, we drafted three other players in this draft, and you know, you guys being talent evaluators, you've been in this game for a little while. You know, we also have had some other young players in the past couple of drafts. You know, playing the preseason, you've seen a little bit in summer league. So based on what you've seen thus far, so I have a scale for you. All right. So you got yikes, which is the worst. Oof, which is a little bit worse. Okay, which is just mid. Wow, which is good. And whoa is really good. So let's start with a guy that's a friend of the NoCMOs Collective, Jalen Williams. I affectionately call him Santa. We don't have to get into that. What's your feelings on Sir Jalen Williams?
Santa Clara.
Just Santa.
And for me, it's a whoa right now. I mean, he looks every bit the part of an NBA guy. And he's scoring, he's assisting, he's playing defense, he's playing off ball, on ball. He's doing everything you want and everything that he showed all year at Santa Clara. Rucker was on him pretty early last year, and it's looking like a good one. And he's just a really smart basketball player who can do pretty much whatever you ask him to on either end of the floor.
Yeah, I would say wow, and I appreciate Metcalf giving me some credit for once. But I think this is what Jalen – you saw this at Santa Clara, and I thought he needed to go to the right place to showcase this early on. And when the Thunder were aggressive and drafted him where they did, I was like, oh, boy, Presti, you animal. Like, I was just like, this is a great spot for him because we've talked about this before. They're just so good at developing guys. And the Thunder are great because they have a rare opportunity for young talent, and which is playing time. They want guys to learn while getting reps and experience. And that's a really rare thing for a lot of NBA teams. Like a lot of teams want to win. They have to win right away because they want to keep their jobs. And I think that's what's so special about OKC is they're building something. So they're like, let's teach these young guys. Let's get them playing time and learn through growing pains. And Jalen Summer League was just outstanding. And from what I've seen briefly in the preseason, like it just looks like the confidence is rolling and he's going to be a great piece. And I do think there's even more to his game that's going to grow and blossom. But I think that's going to be a real special piece for the Thunder moving forward. I love his game. I think he can just do a lot of roles and a lot of things on the court.
Yeah, for sure, man. And, you know, it was interesting in Summer League, you know, we saw him thrive playing more off ball, like being a cutter, being a slasher, like finishing strong at the rim, a little bit of shooting here and there. But in the preseason, he's been our de facto backup point guard for every game except for this past game whenever he started at the wing. So, yeah, the versatility on both ends of the ball, like it's crazy. So, yeah, love what we're seeing out of Jalen Williams. So, now we got to go to my guy, one of my favorite players on the team right now, Usman Jang, hashtag Jang Gang, baby. We'll start with Rucker. Rucker, how are you feeling about him?
You know, I know he's been showing some good flashes in the preseason. I love the timeline because I feel like Thunder fans just keep me in the loop whenever I'm on Twitter. So I know he's been showing some flashes, but I think this is going to be a real good year for him. And you're going to have your peaks and valleys with Jang because he's going to be raw. Me and Metcalf have talked about this on the No Ceilings pod. We thought the rookie year might be a little bit of a struggle for him, but it wasn't in a bad way. It was just like he needs time to adjust to the speed of the game because there's so much talent. You know, from last year, I remember first half of the year, Metcalf, we couldn't even project him to get drafted. And then all of a sudden
he was the worst watch in the class.
Yeah. And then the light switch came on and it was like, whoa, 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 who's this guy? Where's the stunt double that we've been watching the first half of the season? But another guy that I thought landed in a perfect spot because like I just said, you know, playing time and reps, and he might be a guy that plays for the Blue that we've all talked about before, like how good of a job the Blue do with their developmental, you know, system and staff. But I'm really excited to see him continue to grow because I think he had a play tonight I saw against Detroit where I was like, okay, Usman, like, there we go, bud. There's some confidence rolling, but.
He went full cook mode in Detroit. He scored all of his points in the fourth quarter, taking Ivy off the dribble, ISO and Jalen Duren for a three. Like, he was cooking tonight.
What about you, man?
Yeah, and that's exactly what you want to see from him, though, is just these flashes. Because based on his year last year, it was a really, 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 really rough start to the season. And then he kind of started to figure things out, and it slowly came along. And, you know, he still ended up as a lottery pick because of it. So, and a lot of this is kind of based on my expectations for him this year being so low, but it doesn't affect, you know, I still think long-term he's going to be a really good basketball player. So from this year, I think as long as you're getting those occasional flashes that kind of start being pieced together a little more here and there, I think that's exactly what you want from him, because it's going to be a learning process. And if I think if expectations are that you're going to get this really dynamic wing all season producing at a high level, you're going to be disappointed. But if you're viewing it as a long-term developmental project and looking for the steps that he's taking throughout the season, I think there's going to be a lot with him to get really excited about on both ends of the floor.
I really enjoy what the Thunder are doing with Jang currently. Like, you know, in these first five preseason games, basically what they do is the first three quarters of the game, they use him as a role player. You know, they say go out mm-hmm. there, defend, you know, go out there, play on the wing, you know, receive passes. The last quarter, especially at the last 6 minutes of every fourth quarter that I've seen, it's basically G League Jang. So it's basically, hey, you have the ball, you go ahead and create, you go ahead and be the de facto point guard, the de facto man out there on the floor. And I love what they're doing with him. I love, you know, I do think he's going to spend some time with the blue, but I do think that when he is with the blue, they're going to focus in on those, what he's doing in those last 6 minutes of the fourth quarter. When he's with the team, I think they're going to focus in on, hey, you're a role player now, go out there, defend, go out there in the corners, shoot threes, you know, grab rebounds, and just, you know, fill in the gaps that need to be filled in. But I really like what I'm seeing as far as how they're handling his development.
And that's exactly what you want from them too, because they're giving him the bulk of the minutes and the role that he's most likely to fill when he is with the Thunder as that off-ball guy, as that role player who's kind of connecting everyone on both ends of the floor. But then they're also kind of letting him experiment and learn through failure and try different things and try and see, oh, wait, how quickly can we actually get to this upside that, you know, a lot of people think he has. So yeah, I agree. I love that approach. And it's something that I feel like we don't always see a ton of teams do, at least out front, like obviously behind doors or in the G League, they do it. But, you know, getting those live reps again in the preseason against actual guys who are going to be on NBA rosters, I think that's really important.
Yeah. And the thing that like sticks out to me with Usman Jang, like all the offensive sparks that we've seen, like, you know, him creating off the ball, creating for himself and his teammates, and, you know, what we've seen him shooting the ball here recently, you know, working with Chip Ingram, like, hey, give me some more of that Usman Jang. But defensively, dude, that man is a demon on defense. Like, and he's 6'10", he's long as heck, he's got huge broad shoulders and a frame to fill out. Like, he's going to be a problem. And Metcalf, like, you were one of the first to point out Usman Jang's defensive potential in that article you wrote. So, I mean, you know, do you have anything to add about his defense? Or
it was a lot of it is just getting comfortable with the speed and physicality of the play. And that's what I saw last year with him, where so much of it, he was just terrified to get beat off the dribble. So when he flipped his hips, he immediately retreated straight back to the rim and was kind of afraid of contact, and that just left him vulnerable mm-hmm. to pull-ups all over the place. But then as he started kind of figuring out the speed of the game and just the physicality that he had to play with, that's when he started, you know, cutting off drives and bodying guys and, you know, hitting them with his chest and using his length and strength and just physicality and athleticism in a much more positive fashion. So that's the kind of stuff where it's like, okay, you're figuring out how your body works and the speed that you need to move and react at. And now you're able to figure out how to be a positive player on that end. Because if you can do that early as a young player, that's a much easier way to get minutes than being this dynamic scorer, because every team has guys who can get 20 if they want to, but so few have young versatile wings who can defend nearly every position.
Yeah. And that's something that definitely sticks out with Mark Daigneault. If you want to get out on the court, play some defense. And I think Usman Jang is going to get a lot of playing time this year when he's on the team, when he's not on the blue. But we'll kind of go back and forth. I'll alternate between you for these next few, because I really wanted to highlight those, because those were our other two lottery picks in this draft that, you know, we all covered together kind of. So first, I'm going to start with Metcalf's favorite player in this draft class, the other Jalen Williams.
Yeah, I was hoping this would go this way. Sorry.
what are your thoughts on Jalen Williams' play so far, Metcalf?
He's fine. I don't know.
He's just okay.
I'm just okay. And so I really wish he would have come back or gone back to Arkansas for another year. I think he would have been almost a surefire first round pick. He's a really smart player, and I just wish that he would do that in ways that aren't just falling over all the time. And in the NBA, he won't get away with it quite as much. So far, okay. I think I'm really interested to see just how the shot with him continues to develop, because the basketball IQ on both ends of the floor is there. You see it with his defensive rotations. You see it with his playmaking out of the short roll. There's legitimate two-way skill there. It's just, what is the actual ceiling for him? And then, unfortunately, like so many players, it's going to be capped by what does the shot turn into?
Yep. Absolutely fair. All right, let's transition to the next, this past class. Rucker, let's go to Josh Giddey.
What do you want to, we could talk for 3 hours about Josh Giddey. I absolutely love Josh Giddey. I don't know. I couldn't be more excited to watch Giddey this year. I think he's quickly entering the territory as, you know, must watch TV, or he's becoming one of the most exciting players to watch in this league. Because, you know, I always joke and I always say, like, Nikola Jokic, I always feel like every time you watch a Nuggets game, he's going to make you laugh out loud with like a pass he makes. And I feel like Giddey's entering that territory where like he makes some decisions every game that I'm like, oh my gosh, this dude is awesome. And I think it's a big year for him because we know how good SGA is. Obviously I wanted to see Chet with these guys, but Giddey, I think, is trending in the right direction quickly. And I think this could be a real big year for that backcourt. They got a lot of pieces around them. And I just think Giddey, if he can take that next step, and then you get Chet coming back next year. And I know I'm talking down the road, but adding another pick, that's a high selection maybe. And I'm not rooting for the Thunder to lose. I'm just saying they got 48. So somebody else could be up there. They got a lot of stuff going in the right direction. And I think this team has a rare opportunity this year where a lot of those pieces, including Giddey, get another year of developing, and all of a sudden they could really hit the ground running. And I'm not saying it's out of the question that the Thunder overachieve this year, but if that's going to happen, Giddey needs to take that next step. And I think he can, because he's just special talent.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, if his shooting is what he was doing, you know, in the preseason thus far with his work with Chip England, then he's going to reach that point much quicker than we thought. So Metcalf, you know, I had to pick on you and say that I gave you your favorite player in the last draft class, but I'm actually giving you one of your favorite players in this past draft class, and Trey Mann.
I have irrational love for Trey Mann. I think I'm a bigger fan of Trey Mann than Trey Mann's mother is. he's going to be such a dynamic offensive player, maybe not this year, but sooner rather than later. The space creation, seeing that translate directly from Florida into the NBA is exactly what you want from him. I still think he runs a really fun two-man pick and roll game. He hasn't had the most dynamic role partners to work with the Thunder in his first couple of years. That's one of my bigger bummers that Chet isn't there. I think they would have ran a really fun two-man game this year, but my expectations and hopes with Trey Mann for this year and going into the future are still just extraordinarily high.
Yep. What do you think about him adding bulk, man? I don't know if you've seen him recently. He's ripped.
Yeah. It kind of goes back to like during his pre-draft workouts when he had that video where he basically dunked from the free throw line. And everyone was just like, you didn't dunk once at Florida. Where the hell did this come from? And now he's bulking up. He's like, oh my God. It's like, it's astounding. I think he's going to, maybe not this year again, but a year from now, it wouldn't surprise me if he's a 20-point-per-game scorer.
It's just every time I watch him, I feel like there's a new, like, how low he gets to the ground, like on step backs and stuff. Yeah. It's like, I don't understand how his body's able to do that. It's so quick. Like, just the level at which he's already able to create space. Like, every time I watch him, all I'm thinking is, like, if these shots just start falling consistently, because he gets open almost every time or gets a good look. like you said, if they fall consistently, then there really is like, you know, some people in like Thunder fandom have been like, oh, like maybe he's our sixth man of the future. But I feel like that's kind of putting a like low ceiling on him if he continues to do what he's doing now.
Yeah, and his flexibility and the amount of like force that he generates with that front plant foot is absurd. And it's stuff that we see from guys who are like 25, 26, 27, once they've really physically matured and figured out how to take care of their bodies. And he's been doing this since his sophomore year in college. And it's such a special skill set. And once he, you know, finds that consistency with it and how to create, you know, buckets, it's going to be scary.
Yeah. And Rucker, with respect to JRE and Wiggins, I'm going to skip to Poku so we can move into the actual scouting portion of the thing. So Alexa Pokuševski, Tyler Rucker, how you feeling about him? I don't know if you got to see him any in the preseason, but he looks a lot better.
Oh boy. Okay. How do I be friendly on this podcast? I'm rooting for Poku. It's a big year for him. I just think that look up
nice words.
I'm trying. I got a thesaurus in front of me. No, here's the thing with Poku. It's never that I didn't like the player of Poku. I didn't like the overhype machine of Poku because I think he was going to be this guy that took a real long time. I thought it was unfair for a lot of people to think he was going to be this next unicorn. I was like, this dude's gonna need some time from the level of play overseas he came from and do adjusting, and I'm rooting for him. He sounded like he gained some good weight in the offseason, which is a welcome sign, and it's just one of those guys. He's got the talent. I just think he needs to have the game slow down a little bit, and another great guy that landed in the right place that's gonna let him, you know, learn through growing pains. And he's had some, like, let's not hide from it, but this is a big year for him. Absolutely. Especially now you have all these pieces and this talent around. So if he's not taking that step forward, they got other guys that are going to be ready to go. And, you know, I don't want to rag on anyone, but I'm rooting for Poku. I just have my doubts still, but we'll see. Metcalf's a huge Poku guy, in case you guys know this.
I was higher on him than you were.
Were you really?
I sat on that fence and had him at like 16 in that draft because I had no idea what to do with him.
Metcalf's old big board rankings, like whenever I get like teased about him.
Draft that was really
gosh. They're unbelievable.
There's one that was really bad. But we don't need to talk about that. That's in the past. Stop living in the past, Rucker. We're looking towards the future.
When you revealed those on air, I feel like I almost had a stroke. So
didn't you have Franz in like the 20s?
Stop it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
We don't need to bring up old stuff.
I guess we're moving on.
That's tough. All right. Well, hey, we'll save the other questions in the Thunder Talk. We'll save it to the end. We'll transition to the end. Let's get into the moment everybody's kind of been waiting for, the – you know, the elephant in the room that everybody, you know, wants to talk about when it comes to the draft this year, and that's Victor Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson. And, you know, this segment I just called Let Rucker Cook. Tyler Rucker, man, you were privileged enough to go to Las Vegas and get to witness Victor Wembanyama play against Scoot Henderson's team. Just talk about it, man.
Yeah, I mean, Metcalf was watching like a possessed demon too on TV. So you can hammer him with some questions too, but seeing Victor in person, good Lord. He is humongous. Very lengthy, very agile, just like the fluidity he has even in warmups and how detail oriented he is when it comes to his preparation before games. It just kind of blew me away. And gave me a lot of Chet Holmgren vibes, which was someone I got to see last year with Albert, who came to go see Victor with me this year. Mm-hmm. But we kind of just talked about the similarities where it just really shocks you when you see someone that lengthy and that fluid. And I had a lot of questions about Victor, a lot of hesitations. Me and Metcalf have talked about it on the No Ceilings pod, and that's kind of why I wanted to go scout him in person, because I was just like, I don't know if this is that generational guy that everyone's talking about. And it did not take long into that first game for me to go, oh my goodness. Like, and it's just funny because, you know, the seats were filled with NBA execs. I joked. I think I actually was standing in front of Presti's view before the warmups once. I was like, oh, sorry. Sorry, Sam, I'm blocking you. But, you know, all the execs in the stands were like laughing at some point. They're just like, this is ridiculous. And Scoot was just as impressive. Stocky. Scoot's going to be a ball of muscle to deal with. I mean, he's going to be a problem too. So this draft's going to be special. If me and Metcalf were talking the other day, I was like, I don't know if there's a loser if you get a top two pick. I mean, I know everyone wants Victor, but Scoot is going to be something special too.
Yeah, for sure. And now Metcalf, you know, obviously, like, you wasn't there at the game, but I know you guys were covering the game on playback. And hand up, I fell asleep. I crashed. Old man energy over here, so I didn't get to participate in that.
You fell asleep? That's never happened before.
Yeah, I know, right? Shocker. I listened to your all's podcast, and you actually talked about how you had Scoot number one, Metcalf, and Rucker had Wimby number one. And then after the game, you actually moved Wimby number one, and Rucker moved Scoot number one. So what did you see? Go ahead and talk about Wimby. What did you see at Wimby that made you want to move him ahead of Scoot?
Just he answered every single question that I had that I had poised about his game up to that point, and he did it immediately. And it's almost like he went through a checklist and was like, okay, well, no, you're wrong about me there and there and there, and here's that and that. It's like, oh my god, you're just doing all of it. So my kind of change of heart had nothing to do with like the actual numbers. I know the numbers were absurd. Mm-hmm. That was the best he has ever shot, ever. I don't expect him to shoot 60% from three on movement and range and on pull-ups for the entirety of his career. So I do think from just a pure shooting standpoint, I think that week was the outlier, but I never really had any concerns over his jumper. It was what he did going to the rim and the fact that he just never did it. Everything was always rushed. It was one dribble and shoot. It was a lazy rip through trying to bait a foul or a post fadeaway. And that week he showed, you know, actually breaking guys down in isolation. He finished through contact going to the rim. He was, you know, combining multiple post moves. It was all of the stuff that he had never shown up to that point, and he was doing it throughout the entire game. And the fact that it was, okay, no, he knows that, or he can do all of this. This doesn't feel like a flash in the pan. All of these moves and variety of shots feel like something that he's practiced and has really ingrained into his game. It didn't feel fluky. It was like, okay, nope, you were just kind of maybe going through the steps up until this game, maybe to protect his body, to make sure he was healthy so he could really show out in front of the NBA execs. But he showed everything in his arsenal, and it was the exact counter to all of the questions that I had poised to him.
Love it, man. That's great insight. And you know, I got to go to Rucker here because, you know, Rucker was the guy that got to see it. He got to see the freak, and he was like, you know what? I'm going to move Scoot number one. Rucker, what did you see out of Scoot that made you want to move him ahead of Wimby?
Oh, no. So here's what happened. Metcalf backed me up on this. Okay. I had Wimby one going into Vegas. Metcalf had him Scoot one. And after the first game, I was so impressed with Scoot that I texted Metcalf that night and I said, you might not be alone. I might be moving Scoot up to number one. And then I went back and I watched, because the first day I didn't get to see Victor warm up entirely by himself. So the second game I got to watch Victor warm up entirely, and I was just absolutely floored about how serious, how locked in, like everything he was working on was an area that me and Metcalf had talked about, like those are his weaknesses, and he was literally working on every single thing. I was like, because we were like, okay, his post-up game, like it's just all over the place. He hammered his post-up game and warm-ups. Face-up game, I was like, I just wish he had a little bit more face-up, like his footwork. Like if he just had that elbow jumper, he was obsessed with it in pregame. And then it was just, everything was just like a robot. I always said when I worked for the Warriors, like I got to watch guys before games, and Kawhi Leonard was always the most impressive player preparing for a game because everything was landing in the same spot. His footwork was just ridiculous. Victor was just obsessed with like breaking down specific footwork to improve his game. And then it translated into the game. And that's when I texted Metcalf, I think after the second game, I was like, never mind. I was like, Victor. And at that game, I wasn't like trying to obsess with his stats. I was just like, the shots he's hitting is what I haven't seen in this preseason. And you didn't see a lot of it last year. It was just, he was NBA Jam mode. And it was more of like a, he was confident. It was what he was working on before the game. And it translated over. And that's, and you could see someone's that serious and has the work ethic and mentality you want. That's where it's like, okay, this is someone special.
When are you warming up with like hand-eye coordination with like some like a tennis balls?
Yeah, so I mean, he like started the whole process with like a really intense stretch, like almost yoga status. Like it was hurting my knees watching. And then he gets these tennis balls out. He's juggling. He's doing hand-eye coordination. Puts his shoes on. Finally gets like on the court to start doing stuff. And it's, you know, 2 feet around the rim, like around the world. Both hands, form shooting. It was just slowly and methodical and stretched out. And I was just like, it's a technician who's really wanting to get better. And I thought I was going to be the complete opposite. I thought I was going to be a guy that just knew he was the guy. He was that good. But you can tell he wants to be great. And from everything I've heard talking to people, that's the type of character he has. That's the type of kid he is.
Yep, for sure, man. Well, I apologize for the slander and misinformation. I misunderstood.
No, it's okay. It's okay. It's fine because I do like Scoot, so it's all right. Don't worry about it.
Classic Dylan.
Yeah, always stirring crap up.
So, but hold on. So before we move on, so of course, you know, number one Wemby, number two Scoot. Of course, we got Miller number three. Correct.
Sorry, who?
I didn't hear you. Cut out.
Yeah.
It was the perfect cutout.
What was it?
Leonard Miller, number three, right?
Hey guys, it's been great.
Alex is in Leonard Miller truther.
Oh man,
Alex, no, hey, God gave you a chance there to say someone different after he made that cutout for a second.
He did.
And you still tried again.
Steve, hold you fat, but.
On podcasts, you usually don't get a second chance.
That was your one. And the fact is, you're in the dark, too, so people watching couldn't even see your lips to see like, it. You got the perfect recipe. You gave it up, man.
That was an all-time moment. No. That
was fine. That's your short answer. No.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Great guy. Not third.
He didn't show me much. I know. Steve Hoey's fan, though. Like, that's the guy.
All-time name. But, you know, let's go back to Metcalf. Metcalf, you know, we talked about Wemby. Obviously, like, Wemby is the guy that everybody wants because not only is he this generational prospect that can do all these things with the ball in his hands, can do all these things defensively, but just, like, his freakish, like, length and his height and all that. But Scoot, who is literally the antithesis of that, like, what is he? He's 6'3"?
I think they had him listed at 6'4", but I think that's generous. I think he's closer to 6'2", 6'3".
Okay, yeah. So, you know, antithesis of that in terms of, like, you know, height and length. But, you know, still, like, a can't-miss number two prospect. What did you see out of him that impressed you?
Yeah, so my change in rankings had nothing to do with Scoot. I actually feel better about him than I did going into that week. And in a vacuum, if you just compare the two as just basketball players, I don't think there's a whole lot of difference. I think Scoot is that good. But then obviously when you factor in the size, that's where it really kind of changes things. What I loved so much about Scoot in those games was, or I guess that game, because he got hurt in the second one. He came out in that first half just determined to take over the scoring. And he was going to finish at the rim in the mid-range from three. He hit a step back over Victor. The shot was a big question mark with him, and it looked better. I still think there's a lot of work that he's got to do with it, but it looked a little more comfortable, a little more consistent, especially from outside. I thought the mid-range still looked really good. I thought that looked pretty solid last year. It looked a little even more effortless this year. But his just understanding of angles is absurd for someone his age. And that's, you know, the at rim finishing angles where he's using the rim to protect from Victor, that inside scoop layup that he had on Victor after he snaked through the lane, his understanding of angles with his playmaking and setting guys up and creating out of the pick and roll or making the easy kickout passes or making the complex kickout passes. He just knows where everyone is on the court at all times and exactly how to counter it. And the athleticism and strength come into play, but so much of how he succeeds is mental. And I feel like we don't always get that, especially from guys with his athleticism at his age. And he doesn't rely on his athleticism. He uses it in an effective manner, but it's his mind that's always at work and always dissecting every level and layer of the floor. And then in the second half of that game, he came out as a floor general. He saw a couple guys who were hot from three and made it the priority to get them easy shots, and he did it, and that's how they kind of sustained their lead. So the fact that he was playing on ball, off ball, scoring, creating for others, playing really, really high level defense, he showed me everything I want from a franchise cornerstone.
I love it, man. Rucker, what? Oh, go ahead, out.
No, I'm just gonna say, hey, it's been real. I gotta head out.
Jesus,
guys.
Ladies, man. Have a good night.
Hi, man.
Rucker, man, you know, being there live, what popped for you with Scoot?
A lot. I just said it to Metcalf. I said, you know, he impressed me just as much as Victor. His athleticism is definitely eye-opening, but the change of gears and how he understands now patience and how to play with feel. He's doing stuff that, you know, guys in the NBA that are young guards are still struggling to figure out, and he's doing it. He just turned 18 earlier this year. So I think that comes with why he played with the Ignite last year. Mm-hmm. He got those reps, and you're seeing the games really slowing down. And, the most impressive thing I thought was that he played different roles throughout that game. And I'm sorry if I repeat what Metcalf says, it just feel like me and him can't stop talking about this, but Scoot could have had 40 if he wanted to. He understood the flow of the game and understood he didn't have to. So when he started hitting those shots and really taking over in the first half, then he realized he's going to make the defense collapse. And he had a couple kickouts that were just absolutely gorgeous, where it was just the timing of waiting till the last second, in which he has three guys trying to block a shot, and it's just a wide open kick to the corner. No one's 10 feet within the next, you know, shooter. So it's just maturity, which is really rare for guys that young, because they know they're the guy, they know how talented they are, but it shows the willingness to make your teammates better. And that's what Scoot does. And that's what impressed me the most, because I think, Metcalf, you even texted me during the second game. You're like, it's interesting how the Ignite are playing with Scoot out now. Like, it was just all over the place. And in a weird way, that was like a big thing for Scoot, like a big plus, is like, hey, look, he's not playing, but everyone's all over the place now. And I think that showed you how much better Scoot made everything, how controlled he was. And yeah, when he hits the afterburners in person and transition, like, it's like, oh my gosh, like, he is just an absolute blur. So he's gonna get plenty of Russell Westbrook comparisons, but and they're well deserved, just because that's the same type of player they are. But I still think Scoot, you know, from the passes he made, some of the tight windows and stuff, it was unbelievable. And I'm not saying Westbrook was a bad playmaker, but Scoot's got special upside.
Yeah, I was like, remember what kind of podcast you're on now, man?
No, that's why I brought him up. I was a big Brody guy. Backtrack. Slow down. You just got to get out of that Lakers jersey.
Favorite fan base.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just he's got special tools. I really do think whoever gets the top two pick, like Scoot, that dude is a machine. I was just floored by how good he looked and how mature he looks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think, you know, what you said is important, because, like, you know, people get lost in the just the one-on-one matchup between Scoot and Wimby, even though, like, you know, they really weren't guarding each other that much of the game. They play completely different positions, but, like, there was a basketball game being played, and Scoot was making winning plays, and his team was the one that came out on top and won. And the other thing that really stood out with me on Scoot, like, you know, from seeing his tape from last year, the explosiveness in the passing, obviously, like, was the given, but, like, the creativity with his dribble is insane. Like, yeah, he was doing some things to that basketball that, like, legitimately made my jaw drop.
And his off the ball stuff in that first game, Metcalf, mm-hmm, you pointed that out to me, and I was like, yes. Like, it's funny because stuff I saw in person, then you go back and you watch the tape again, and I was like, man, he looked even faster on tape sometimes. It's just crazy. Like, but off the ball, he's so shifty now, and it's the understanding of the angles. And that's what me and Ty kept talking about. It's just like, you could see things are slowing down. He understands now the timing, and, you know, if he takes a half a step more this way, it creates a better driving lane. It's just that first year, I think you saw he had some tough misses where it was just the finish was just off, and he just needed that timing to get down. Now it's getting down, and he's just getting scary.
Yep, absolutely, man. Well, you know, I mean, we could do a 2-hour podcast on just Wimby and Scoot, oh, but
yeah.
This is a loaded draft class. Like, this is what I've tried to tell everybody. Like, I could name 14 prospects off the top of my head, and I'm not as into it as you guys are, and I would be thrilled with any of them. And, like, that's just the lottery. Like, this is a super deep draft class. So, aside from Wimby and Scoot, who are some prospects, and you know, because these guys aren't in college, like, you know, one's in G League, one's in the overseas pro team. Who are some of the top prospects in college this season that Thunder fans should be keeping their eyes on?
I adore Jairus Walker from Houston.
Oh boy, he's good.
Yeah. So he currently listed 6'8", 236. He was basically a point center at IMG as a senior, but versatile defender, good rim protector, really skilled with the ball, smart passer, physical scorer. The shot looks a little funky, but it went in a lot more than you would think. So I, you know, just a couple minor tweaks. Chip England will get that figured out in a month, yes. and he'll be, love, you know, he'll be shooting 38% from three by the end of his rookie year. So I love Jairus Walker's game.
Yeah, I don't enjoy pro comparisons, but I think it'll be eventual amount of time before someone throws a Scotty Barnes comparison to Jairus Walker. Mm-hmm. His playmaking is absurd. It's sort of even like some defensive rebounds, look up the floor, hits a guy complete in stride from, you know, under the basket for a transition layup. He's a machine, and he's going to the right school to really unlock his game. Now, if his shot's got to take a step in the right direction, but if it does, I wouldn't be surprised if he's a top, you know, seven guy. I think some people are already starting to get on that hype train, and, you know, they showed some preseason workouts of him at Houston. He looks big as shit. he looks huge. So I was like, oh boy, he's going to be a machine this year. But, Jairus is a guy I really like. Metcalf, I know you got somebody else. Come on.
I just assumed you're going to go with Cam Whitmore.
Yeah, I love Cam Whitmore. Cam Whitmore could be he should be the third pick. I know there's a lot of Amen Thompson fans out there. I understand why, but mm-hmm. Whitmore is he's like Freddy Krueger when he's driving the lane. Like, he just tries to dunk people into a dark dimension. Like, and he's got power. He's got nastiness. He lights up when he's got a clear driving lane. And I think that outside shot's really developing. So Whitmore's a guy I would keep an eye on. He's going to Villanova, about 6'8", but thick. And if that versatility offensively takes a step, he is a problem.
Yeah, Whitmore is a name that, you know, a lot of Thunder fans are throwing out there. I mean, they've pretty much resigned to the fact we're not getting Wimby or Scoot. So, like, you know, if we can get Whitmore, if we get like a true wing to add to this team, like, that would be awesome. So, yeah, that's definitely a name that they like. But who's a couple more? If I was to press you and ask for, like, I don't know, two more each.
Well, hey, let me throw a little wrinkle. let me ask you guys, what do you want for the Thunder? Yeah. And me and Metcalf will try to figure out who that guy is. Because I feel like we need to throw something at you guys, because you guys are smart too. We need to kind of mix this up.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I feel like, you know, having Shea, Giddy, like, you kind of have guards figured out. Obviously, in the NBA, especially when you're a team that's rebuilding, you got to draft best player available, not necessarily for fit. But I think right now the big thing is figuring out that four spot. You know, Usman Jang's look pretty good. Maybe years down the line, he could find a way to fill that spot. Baisley, that experiment, I'm not really into the whole Baisley experiment at this point anymore. You know, maybe Poku makes that all-NBA MVP jump that we've all been waiting on. And any day now. He fits that spot. Oh, it's he's like at least like 3 days away. He's almost there. But yeah, I think really that four spot is kind of what we're looking for. Cam Whitmore is also a guy that I like a lot. He's one of the guys that I've kind of looked into a good bit, because, yeah, I'm starting to get, maybe once again, you know, preseason doesn't really mean much, but I've convinced myself that the Thunder aren't going to be awful this year. And especially when you have a team like the Spurs, like you've got the Jazz who are probably going to blow it up more. Scoot and Victor might be out of the question by the end of things. So yeah, I think that four spot is really kind of what we're looking for. Someone that can just play off ball, be a guy that can fit next to Shea and Giddy, who both kind of need the ball a bit more, and fit well next to Chet as the five.
Yeah. And kind of add into that, like, you know, obviously four, but like I'd even go to three. Like, I just think, I mean, just take away the numbers. Like, I think we need a two-way wing, a guy that can, you know, do things on both sides of the ball, could potentially be a defensive stopper, has defensive versatility, but can also, you know, create his own shot off the dribble. Like, you know, obviously we have Josh Giddey as a phenomenal creator. We have Shea, who's one of the best drivers in the league. He demands a lot of gravity driving to the basket, but you know, you look at like championship level teams, they have that two-way wing. You know, you got a Jason Tatum, you got Andrew Wiggins, which, you know, he doesn't have as much offense, but like defensively he's a game changer. Like Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, like, you know, players like that. So yeah, I definitely think a wing's like the missing piece for this team.
Metcalf, do you want to start?
Sure. Yeah. And so, and based on your guys' description, I think Walker and Whitmore would be my top two. I'm a huge Derek Whitehead fan. Duke, 6'7", 190-pound small forward, unfortunately starting the year with a foot injury, I think. His foot or knee, I don't know, I'm blanking. But the leaps he's made as a shooter over these past two seasons have been pretty astronomical. And at Montverde this last season, he kind of played the role of volume scorer with a bit of, you know, just really high level on ball defense, fell asleep a little off ball. And then some kind of flashes of really high level passing. But as a junior, when he was playing with Duren and Nembhard and Houston, and Langston Love, he was more in that, he was more in that more of a role player, where he was doing all the off ball work and playing good team defense and rotating and doing all the kind of stuff that you didn't see from him as a senior. So it kind of felt like as a senior, he took that step up into, all right, now I get to mess around and have a lot of fun with the ball and get to do the fun stuff, because I just went through the muck that, you know, doesn't get any of the praise. So I think there's a healthy mix of both of those roles there. And once he kind of finds that balance, I think he's going to be a really good player. He's currently number three for me on my board.
Okay.
You got Derek that high?
Yeah.
Proud of you. No, Derek's definitely up there for me. I think I got him six. The whole time you guys were talking, I just started dreaming of Chet and Jairus Walker playing together next year. Yep. And I was just like, oh my gosh.
That's perfect.
It is really that perfect. But Jairus is the... He's a Presti special of, like, a mock draft might have him going eighth and the Thunder are picking fifth. And Presti's just like, nah, come down here. You're going to us.
Take the guy you want, right?
Yeah, it's just go get your guy and it's potential. But Whitehead would be up there for me. Metcalf loves this guy, but Dylan Mitchell also seems like he would be a little bit of an interesting wrinkle.
And the big question mark with him is the shot.
The shot is the big one.
He's got to show something.
He'd be Loot Dort 2.0, just kind of hair on fire, jumps out of the gym. It's just the shot. I think like the extreme wild card I thought of was Brandon Miller.
Yeah, I would take him over Mitchell.
Yeah, we love some Brandon Miller, but 6'9", lengthy wing, probably gonna have a big year for Alabama. It's got some offensive tools. Who was it? Was it Corey? Corey said he said I see some Paul George vibes. So there you go.
Okay,
but those are probably a couple of names I'm thinking of. Feel like everyone talks about the Thompson twins, but I don't really see the Thunder going that route.
Yeah.
And you know, you talk like with Dylan Mitchell, like, you know, the question is the shot. I would, like, I'm not saying that's a deal breaker, because, you know, we do have, like, you know, one of the best shooting coaches in the game. We've seen, like, he's already made short work of some of these guys' shots with just like minor tweaks. But I would say, like, after the pain that we've had to suffer with just having like all these long rangy defenders that can't shoot, I would say that it's up close to the top of the list.
I would agree.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah. So, all right, I like that. Internationally, you know, last year, you know, you guys said like it was kind of like a weaker international class. Is it more the same this year, or is there some guys that are gonna kind of, you know, step up? Aside from Wimby, obviously.
Yeah, obviously Wimby kind of elevates that, the whole class. Rucker's really high on one guy.
Yeah, Nikola.
Yeah.
Jurisic. I can never say his last name right, but I can't say anyone's last name right. Playing for Mega this year, 6'8", little nasty, great feel. That's my guy. I really, really like him. I think he's just one of those. I don't think he's going to end up being a top 10 pick, but I think someone get a heck of a basketball player. He's just very plays the game and move ahead, kind of like a chess player. He's just got a good looking shot. He played against the Overtime Elite. He had some good games against them. But I really like how he plays the game. Just good feel, good feet, understands his strengths. And I'm trying to think of some other guys. Ryan Rupert playing for the NZ Breakers. Another great, probably good prospect. Probably not what the Thunder fans are looking for, but lengthy wing defender. Needs to work on a shot. So I probably lost half of the fan base already. So it's not a weak class this year. It's just kind of like there's some upside swings. James Nnaji with Barcelona, really raw big, but he's got some good tools. Who else am I forgetting?
You don't got to go too deep, man.
We're still all I got off the top of my head. No, I know.
Have you guys back on to go deep, deep.
Yeah. Please do, because I can't believe I just rattled off three on October 11th. It's just amazing. That's what the No Ceilings guys have done to me already.
Now, remind me, Nikola, what's his name?
No, like, don't do it to me. Jurisic. That one sounded better. It's with a D, so DJ. Mm-hmm.
But I remember they played Wimby's team early on, didn't they?
I believe so. I might be wrong. Sorry, guys. You know, I'm talking about a ton of guys lately. Metcalf had me do a Big Ten pod tonight, so that's where we're at.
Rocking Michigan hoodie, I see.
Yeah, exactly. Go Blue. You can tell. Go Blue. But no, I really like him. I think that's the one, a little bit of a wild card that I would keep an eye on. Really, really like his game.
Okay. I like it. There's something about international basketball players named Nikola. Like, there's some kind of correlation there. So let's see here. I kind of skipped this when I jumped into the other prospects, but how do I see Wimby and or Scoot fitting with the Thunder? How do you like their fit?
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I love – the funny thing is I love – both of them with any team. Yeah. Like, everyone's going to be like, oh, Victor fits any team. And I'm like, I know the Thunder are probably not wanting to draft Scoot because they'll just have four awesome guards. But I think Scoot's good enough where it's like any team would want him. I don't want that for Thunder fans because I don't want you guys to have to deal with that headache. But they're special. And Pressy's never afraid to jump over, you know, best player available regardless of position. It would make the backcourt a little crowded, but obviously, you know, Wimby and Chet would pretty much cover the whole court by themselves. So I would love to see that pairing.
All right. That is fair. Mike, if you got anything to add on that?
No, the defensive issues that Chet and Victor would present to other teams would just be an absolute nightmare. And awesome. I really desperately want to see it. It would be so weird and different and fun and chaotic. And then I think Scoot is clearly the next best player. And if you have the number two pick, you take him, and then you figure out the rest later. Mm-hmm. Probably someone would be on the move then. But I don't think it would be a, it might be one of those cases where it's better for everyone involved, because I think Scoot is that good of a player where he's a no brainer number one pick in almost any other draft.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, I listened to your last podcast today, talking about the whole Wimby and Scoot matchup. Rucker, you actually had a interesting point about, you mentioned Chet there a second ago, but you said when you were walking out, you heard somebody say that I'd take Wimby right now over Chet. I would sound off on that.
I was ready to fight him for the state of Oklahoma. No, he was just saying, I can't believe I'm gonna give him the attention. The guy was just saying, like, he's way better than Chet. Chet sucks compared to him. And I was just like, I think Albert even at the same time, we were just like, excuse me? I just don't get what is, like, that's the going to be the Chet's too skinny is now we're going to start with comparing those two. But just different players. And I even said on the show with Metcalf, I was like, I'd take Chet right now. And it's as good as Wimby looked in person. Chet defensively is way more advanced than Wembanyama is right now. And I'm not saying Victor can't get to that point, but Chet defensively is extremely intelligent, extremely aware, great anticipation, gifted defender. And Victor's not there. Victor has the flashes with the shot blocking, but there's a lot more to defense than shot blocking. It's reading coverages and fundamentals and how to, you know, show on pick and rolls and be the low man, be, you know, all that fun stuff that Metcalf loves to obsess over all every night, but Victor's not there yet. So that's why I was like, hey, Chet, you gotta be kidding me. It's like, come on. Like, oh man, I was hoping you brought that up. Cause I was like, oh gosh,
I had to get some Chet propaganda in the pot here, man. So,
call the right guys.
I'm gonna put your feet to the fire a little bit. This wasn't in the doc, but you know, Chet's missing this year, and he'll be, you know, assuming he's healthy, he'll be playing next year. What do you think his chances are of getting Rookie of the Year over guys like Wimby and Scoot?
I'll bet it.
From a value standpoint, I like it, but I don't think he'd be the favorite.
Yeah, that's fair.
I'll bet it. Well, I'll say right now on this pod, I'll bet Chet next year to win Rookie of the Year.
I love it.
That's a guarantee. I'll even eventually put up the ticket. So I'll remember that. I'll put that on my phone. I'll be rooting with OKC fans all year.
I like it. Taking a stand. We're clipping it. We're holding you to it.
I'm in. Let's go. Thunder up. Let's do it.
All right. Let's see here. So, and talking about college prospects, I'm ashamed nobody brought up Case Miles or Chris Livingston. It's okay. We'll move on. If I was to ask you guys for one bold prediction for the Thunder this year, just, you know, it could be in a player they draft. It could be in somebody, you know, stepping up and, you know, I guess taking a leap, so to speak. You know, it could be whatever you want it to be.
I'll go with Josh Giddey as an all-star.
Okay.
I love you.
Because like, I just met you, but I love
you. I like that one. Okay, that's good. I'll say Jalen Williams, a.k.a. Santa.
Yes.
Makes all rookie. All rookie team.
I love it.
First or second?
They didn't ask that, Metcalf.
I'm asking.
All rookie first or second team, please.
Going through the class in my head.
Coward. Say it.
I'll say first.
Screw it. You just threw it. Jet rookie of the year next year.
But no, I mean, like. Because I think there's a world where that happens. Let's just say first. Why not?
I like it.
Friend of the program. I got to do it.
We respect you. And clipping the Santa, too. Like, I need all the Santa propaganda I can get. Because as many people that think it's funny and are part of it, there's twice as many people that hate it. So I need it.
It's a long run. I love that though.
Yeah, I'm going down with the ship, man. We're gonna keep it going as long as we can. Let's see here. So one bold prediction for this draft class. I guess I don't know what I meant when I typed this. I guess let's do this. So let's just I don't know what I meant when I typed that. I'm sorry. I'm gonna watch for words. So I did that really quickly when I was at work. But okay. So we had some Twitter questions. Obviously, when you guys come on, you know, all of our listeners have a lot of questions about the draft. Like, I mean, the Thunder fan base, especially these past couple of years, has been very engaged in the draft and learning as much as they can about prospects. And, you know, you guys are one of the best sources out there. So they're very engaged whenever you guys come on. So Cone is going to rifle through a couple of Twitter questions with you.
Yeah, we answered a lot of them just over the course of this thing because, of course. But basically, just a couple to go through real quick. Someone asked kind of what's a more fun duo in your mind, Scoot and SGA or Vic and Chet? And I know you both were kind of talking about how crazy Vic and Chet would be. So I've got a feeling, but like which duo do you think would be kind of more fun? Which one would you rather see?
I have to go with Victor and Chet. I just unbelievable potential with those two. I mean, oh my gosh, the upside they would have is even like a high low game. Oh my Lord. I mean, I'm drooling thinking about it as much as SGA and Scoot would be a blast. Metcalf, go ahead.
Yeah, no, just exact same answer. Just how much they would clean up defensively. It wouldn't matter who the other three guys you put on the court were. They could just, they could be the worst defenders in the league. And I don't think it would matter.
Yeah,
imagine the Chet Wimby pick and roll.
I was just gonna say that, Dylan. Imagine the two of them doing a pick and roll. Like James Naismith would be like reawoken from the grave. Like, what is happening in the sport?
What happened to my sport?
This is not how it's supposed to go.
And then just the other question that a couple of people had was, who's a couple like Thunder guys in this draft? Like, you know, Sam Presti kind of seems to just have these guys where he's like, you know, like, or you just like look at a draft class, you're like, yeah, that's a Thunder guy. Who are a couple of names that you're like, yeah, they're just kind of an OKC guy.
So I really think Jairus Walker is one, just a combination of size and skill and IQ. I'm sorry to keep going back to the same name, but he's the one that just really keeps standing out to me.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Livingston, maybe?
Yes. Let's go.
This is Dylan's favorite pod of all time.
The problem is I always think that there's a lot of guards or like, you know, that could be Presti guys. And then you start remembering how many guards they have. And I'm like, okay, maybe move. Metcalf, do you think Kaluma?
I think Kaluma could. I'm really high on him. I think he's going to have a huge year and kind of that similar type of player as Walker where, you know, 6'7" power forward, really versatile offensively. I'm kind of guessing he's going to be a lottery pick, at least right now. I kind of think Rayan Rupert, I know he's, but the length, the defense, I think the shot is coming along. I think I have a little more faith in it right now than Rucker does, but I think he might fit that mold as well.
Ooh, I think I got a good one. Julian Strother. Yeah, that might be a Presti special. Even if it's like a, not the Thunder pick, but maybe a later pick. But he's playing at Gonzaga, can shoot from outside. I think he's going to have a really good year shooting from outside. He needs to get like above 40%, but he is a hustle player. He rebounds, he attacks the glass from the wing, like, he does a lot of really good stuff on the court. So it's one of those like Jeremiah Robinson Earls, like the Aaron Wiggins, like those type of guys that I feel like he would be in that kind of mold of like, hey, this is a really good piece on this roster that might not cost you a lottery pick, but you know, just adding another asset to that roster. I wanted to say Tyrese Proctor also, but that's another guard. So
another Australian to add to the fray.
Yeah.
Cohen, I know that was the end of the Twitter questions. Did you have any other questions that you wanted to ask the guys while we got them on here?
What do y'all think of Santa as a nickname? I know you said it, but are you for, would you say you're for it or against it?
I'm indifferent because I only recognize one Jalen Williams, so you know.
Oh, that's fair.
The one that falls over while, you know.
How dare you? How dare you? The friend of the pod, Jalen Williams.
There's one, and then the other one has fallen over out of view, so you can't see.
Exactly.
Okay. Where is I thought it's just J Dub. Are we trying to make something up, or is this just because he went to Santa Clara?
Dylan has this agenda because, yeah, Santa Clara. So he's like, oh, you know, Santa. I've just been saying J Dub. Everyone I know has been saying J Dub. I said it once. It made him really happy. So
it makes me happy anytime anybody says
exactly.
It.
No, it makes him smile.
What it was on draft night when we did our draft reaction podcast. You know, we kept saying Jalen Williams. I was like, all right, I'm going to call this one Santa because he went to Santa Clara and it's a funny nickname. And then, you know, it started picking up steam with a couple other Thunder accounts. You know, they thought it was funny. And then, you know, the puns started coming out. I was like, oh, Santa's deep in his bag tonight. Santa climbing up the ladder and coming down the chimney on that one. Santa said, give me those cookies. And it became its own thing. So.
There's going to be a photo around Christmas of J-Dub in a Santa hat, and it's going to be like your new profile photo for like
I need it. I need it, man. I've like, it sucks because our main like graphic artist for our t-shirts, shout out Sublime, Illis One is what his name is on Twitter, but he hates the Santa nickname. Like, he's completely against it. So he refuses to make any kind of Santa merchandise. And I'm just sitting there like, come on, man. Like, just for me. Yeah, I even have a hashtag with it, hashtag believe in Santa. So
he's active on Twitter. Maybe you could ask him. I mean, he tweeted someone, I think like 40 minutes before the game earlier, because someone found an old Facebook picture of him where I think he looked like he was like 12. And he's like, how did you find this?
And,
you could ask him.
It's funny because Sub actually tweeted at him on my birthday and was like, hey, I think Santa should wish Thunder Chats a happy birthday and tag them. And he said, whose birthday is it? And I was like, it's mine. I call you Santa. It's a joke. If it genuinely bothers you, I'll stop doing it. Like, but you know, it's just fun. It's a fun way to remember it and differentiate the names. And he never said nothing. So I'm like, all right, he's cool with it.
Yeah. That's the rules. As long as they don't respond again, exactly. They're cool with it.
Absolutely. So my last question is, you know, you kind of touched on Chris Livingston. Obviously, I'm a Kentucky fan. I got to pander a little bit.
Really?
Man. So like, yeah, yes, we know Cohen. Okay. Hey, no, they're not talking about any Virginia prospects, Connor.
So. Well, Ty Jerome's gone. So what am I supposed to do here, Dylan?
And DeAndre Hunter. Yeah. So, but yeah, so. Case Wallace, Chris Livingston, just for those who are desensitized to those prospects, you know, what's kind of your like snapshot of them?
I think me and Metcalf are buying a lot of Chris Livingston stock. Metcalf, you got him high, don't you?
I have him 14.
Yeah, I got him 19. Want to move him up. I really like how he plays the game of basketball. I think he's going to be one of those pieces that even if he doesn't put up a bunch of, you know, he might not put up 20 a game this year, but he might be a really important piece that scouts fall in love with. I like how he plays the game. I think he's really smart. Wallace, I love how he plays defense. I mean, he is nasty. Mm-hmm. And yep. I joked with Metcalf. I was like, Kentucky always gives me headaches every year to evaluate. And I was like, this is the first year I'm really excited to watch Kentucky as like an evaluator. I was just like, I love the team that they kind of got. I saw the Oscar Tshiebwe news today, so bummer. But Livingston and Wallace, I'm really, really excited to see what they can do.
Yeah, you think Toppin or Collins has an outside shot to make some noise in the second round, something like that?
Corey's really high on Toppin. I need to watch some more. I've been intrigued with the flashes. Metcalf, you got anything on those guys?
I just want to see some more consistency from them. I know their trip to, was it
Bahamas?
Bahamas. Yeah. Made a lot of waves, but the competition in those matchups wasn't the highest, let's say. I know Nick from our No Ceilings crew is really high on Damian Collins. So, and if he kind of starts to click, shows a little bit of a jumper, a little more consistency, kind of actually gets a more consistent role in the minutes he actually gets. It wouldn't surprise me to see him start climbing really quickly.
All right. I like it. Yeah. I'm excited about the Kentucky team, except for having to watch Sevier Wheeler play more basketball.
Is he going to start at point or is Kaysen?
It looks like he's going to. Yes.
God, so they're going to put Kaysen in that same tie role again.
Mm-hmm.
That's awful.
Playing him off ball.
Take back everything awful. You just said.
It's grim times for the BBN, trust me. But hopefully we'll have more shooting around him, though. Brought in Antonio Reeves, and he seems to be a sniper. So that'll be fun. But fellas, you know, I mean, I think we've drained all the draft knowledge we can drain out of you on October 11th. We'll definitely come back to you towards the end of the season. But always a blast having you on. Always leave the podcast, you know, with more knowledge of the prospects. So I want to go ahead and give you guys a chance to plug anything you're working on, plug your podcast, your Twitter profiles, whatever.
Metcalf, go ahead. You're the best at this.
Yeah, because I have to do it every episode. you can find us. No Ceilings NBA across all socials, noceilingsnba.com. It's all free, 100%. Just click that subscribe button to make sure you never miss anything we write. No Ceilings NBA Draft Podcast on Apple and Spotify. Yeah, this is a blast, guys. Appreciate you having us.
Absolutely. Rucker, you got anything to add?
No, all I want to say is thank you guys for having us on. We always talk about how excited we are to come on. Yeah. As Cone, I'm glad we didn't get to do this last time, or I didn't get to meet you officially. I'm glad to officially meet you. And you guys let us know anytime you want us to come on and talk some OKC basketball. And I promise I'll get that Chet Holmgren for Rookie of the Year ticket in for next year. Mark it down.
Absolutely, man. Always a blast having you on. And we'll definitely be in touch throughout the season. So with that being said, guys, hope everybody has a great night. God bless. Hoop when you can. And as always,
thunder up.
Thunder up.
Thunder up.
Thunder up.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for listening to the Topic Thunder podcast. Our podcast is available to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, and Google Play, or anywhere else you listen to your podcast. Be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review, and follow us on Twitter at OKC Topic Thunder.
Thunder up!
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.